free, John, because the 90% had to be stolen from someone.
Absolutely.
And if it's not stolen today from you and your wallet in taxes, it's stolen in the future from your kids and grandkids.
They just print it.
Yeah, they're printing it, and they're stealing it from us when we go to the grocery store.
So we've got a number of questions from some listeners of my program and Ken's program. And one of them that's not on the list that we gave you is, what sort of estimates in dollar numbers are we talking about with Medicaid expansion, just from the your study of the legislation?
Are you talking about how much money we'll save?
Well,
$34 million.
We're going to try to get to reality.
34, I believe, is what it was.
I can tell you that I don't trust any numbers that I've heard so far. And today,
nobody knows.
Today, we were looking at the fiscal note on the bill itself for Medicaid expansion, and it said this: indeterminate.
What does that mean?
So if you're not sure, that's probably a good reason to vote no.
Well, the first thing it means is that when they're projecting 19,000, it could be 54,000. It could easily be
people
two to three times more people signing up than what they're thinking. So they can't determine that. And actually, that's John and I, Chip and I have talked about that. Is, boy, when you can't show me the fiscal note, I'm probably a no vote anyway, because you're spending people's money that you don't know. You honestly don't know. How can you make a good decision if you're not informed? And when what the LSO is telling you on that fiscal note is they don't know, and they're the experts. They don't know.
Because it's anybody's guess.
So let's be real clear on this. I mean, the Democrats have been hitting every newspaper around the state. I mean, even small ones like Buffalo. They've been on radio stations, having interviews that we just listened to some clips from. But they're throwing all of these numbers out. So what we're saying is the bill itself said indeterminate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have no idea what this thing is going to cost.
It's a big question mark.
We built a house once for a client, and he said, when it was over, he says, you know, I gave you guys an unlimited budget, and you blew the hell out of that. That's what we're stepping into. Is yes. It doesn't matter.
You managed to burn through an unlimited amount of
money. I think the state will be able to top that.
Yeah.
Experience.
So it's much like writing a blank check without a contract. That's what this bill would have done. Yeah. And that's what a future Medicaid expansion bill will do. It's a blank check without a contract.
And you'll never get rid of it.
I think that if you'll actually go back and do the study, I think it's actually worse than that. You'll hear hospitals come and say, oh, yeah, this is money and this is a deal, that we can get more money and some is better than nothing. Well, if you look at it, Medicaid right now in Wyoming, the feds are not taking care of the Medicaid contract right now. So this 100% down is not the feds have already lied to us. They're already not taking care of rural hospitals and things at the levels that they claim that they're going to do. And so if they're not doing that, now we're going to expand it 50,000 more people. We can increase that number that we're not really funding.
One of the things we haven't talked about is the quality of care and what happens when you take doctors and you start reducing their opportunities for revenue. And just from a business model, Medicaid and Medicaid expansion is going to necessarily drive care and quality of care down. We're going to have waiting lines. We're going to have, you know, much like you see in Canada, you know, you're going to be waiting years to have an important surgery. And forget about anything that's elective. That just won't be available to you. And the only way they'll be able to make that happen is to take away those opportunities from the people who have the money to do those elective things. It'll become illegal to go outside of the Medicaid or Medicare program.
And it's quality of care. I mean, that's why they come here. They come here because we have excellent care in the United States. I mean, they've waited. I was on a vacation one time and I was visiting with some people. We were there at a gathering and just struck up a conversation with some other folks there, and they were from Canada. And they said now that the big thing up in there is that they're pushing for denying care to the elderly. and because it's just too costly to keep them in care. And so now they're picking and choosing who lives and dies in places like that. And then we look at this and we say, well, that's what we want to become here. That's where they came from. That's where we're headed. You know, and that's, it doesn't, to me, it does not take Fellini to figure out, if you just look around and see what's happened around you, why would you want to do that here? It's just, it's absurd that that's working. No, it's not. It's destroying countries. It's destroying their ability to be sovereign. And it's making and it's enabling people to not have to take responsibility and to work and to do those things that keep a country live and sovereign and supporting itself. And it's just, I marvel at the thought process behind it.
I always like to think about just the innovation that humans have come up with over the last several centuries. And when you look at medicine and you look at where most of the vast majority of the innovation has come from, it's come from this country.
You bet.
And we've paid for that.
4% of the world population.
That's right. And the reason is because of this freedom and liberty we've had. You take that freedom and liberty away and all that innovation will come to an end. Look at the effort that was made to come up with a vaccine. I know we all probably feel the same about the vaccine as it is, but the fact that, you know, when push came to shove, an opportunity was made, and I think government was far too involved with it to be at the best it could have been, but we came up with a vaccine in months.
Yeah. So another question from one of our listeners, and I think I'll get Representative Nyman's reaction to this one. But here's the question. There was an article distributed to House members about the problems in Montana caused by expansion. The former speaker spoke to one legislator in Montana who seemed to refute this. So how could Wyoming legislators best get all the financial facts regarding other states scrambling to meet Medicaid budgets and numbers of people signing up for it were often double what was anticipated? So how can you guys best get a handle on those numbers?
Well, I think we've got to just actually do the math and do the work on your own. You've got to go out and actually look and talk to these people in these different states and find out what exactly happened. I mean, we've got experience on the ground. There's 38 other states that have already done this and see what happened there. I think, you know, I mean, that's in anything. You know, if you want to know how things are going to respond, you want to talk to somebody that's been there. You don't talk to somebody that's headed towards the fight. You want to get some word from a guy that just came from the fight and say, you know, what happened when you guys expanded this? Oh, well, it was great. And we only had this much or whatever. Or you can say, don't do that. You know, it was a train wreck on steroids, and we couldn't begin to keep up with it. And now we're having to try to figure out new ways of financing it. So I think, to answer your question, Dave, if I can, it's just we've got to be proactive about searching out the information and that's I think something that we maybe are a little too complacent in allowing others to funnel information to us, and then we go on that information. I think that we need to go and actually ask the questions ourselves and find out what's actually going on and get the real information from boots on the ground in those areas and those states that have dealt with it. And then I think we can take and benefit from their, you know, experience and save our state a lot of heartache if we can kind of allow them to have maybe made some mistakes that we can avoid by going out there and asking those questions.
I would say the same thing. One of the things I like about the group of conservative legislators is they're not afraid to do the work. Although I do see legislators that don't work, and I think that's probably more common than not. And just as your questioner pointed out that there was data provided to the legislators that said one thing, and the speaker had data that said completely another, Mark can, I'm sure, speak to this, that all the information you get in the legislature from someone else is coming with an agenda. And the only way you're going to get past those agendas is to do the research yourself and dig and dig and dig beyond those agendas.
And there's always more to the story. Mm-hmm. If you can just, you know, when you start digging in, you're going to find things you didn't realize.
Well, Mark, you want to weigh in on that one?
Yeah, a little bit. So when that was distributed, it was given to us as to who had done the research and what they were putting out, whether are they, you know, what their agenda was. Well, their agenda from having remembered that piece of information was to get the information out, what happened in other studies. And because Wyoming was considering it, they had looked at some of the Montana stuff and mentioned that. And so when I look at that particular thing, the former speaker, he talks to one person. Well, if...
all at once?
all at once.
As a group, yeah.
And so if I were to take the people that you have played clips of the Democrat Party, I'll bet you I can get somebody who can tell you to sing the praises of Medicaid expansion. They already have. And so the former speaker should have been called on the carpet to say, what's your source? You talk to one person and you're using that one person to invalidate an entire study. Some of these people are very prestigious fact finders. You can go and look at the Goldwater Institute. You can look at Heartland. You can Heritage. There's people who spend a lot of time doing a lot of this research for us. And what both of these guys have said is true. We still have to go look that up. We have to go research that. But when person gets up on the floor and it's just one person, former speaker or not, he just says, well, I called up one guy up there. Well, did he call up a Democrat that's for it? Or did he call up a conservative who had been fighting it for 10 years? And so, you know, a lot of times you got to figure out where that information's coming from. And then when it's refuted, that has to be figured out too. The reason he made this statement was because he's for Medicaid expansion. And so he uses one person out of Montana that he calls that he probably knew was in favor of it in the first place. And so I don't put much credibility to the speaker getting up and saying, former speaker getting up and saying that. And so,
by the way, that hurts your credibility on the floor, too, when you do those kind of things.
It should.
Good.
That's
good.
Right.
Well, one more question. We've kind of talked about the inability of states to back out of this program. Are you guys aware of any state that has had the financial problems that we're anticipating with Medicaid expansion that was able to back out of the program?
I don't believe the federal statute will allow you to back out.
Could you explain that?
I've been shown, and I haven't researched it myself, but I've been shown the code, the U.S. code, where it says you cannot back out of it. So the arguments that you can seem to me to be trying to cover up the truth.
Now, and to be fair, did you have more than one source?
Nope, just one.
Okay,
that's why I'm not singing it from the hilltops just yet. But I will say that there's not a single state that has backed out. And I think a bigger argument than the code itself would simply be the fact that it was mentioned earlier that once you've presented this opportunity for a benefit to people where they're receiving something from others, this legislature that we have now is not going to step up and say no more.
When it's been tried, the federal transportation is a good example. When they came in and they wanted interstates, they came in at top heavy and they paid a large chunk and the states paid a lower, and then those two were supposed to kind of equalize out. Well, now what you really find is that the states are picking up the tab for a lot of the stuff, not all, but a lot of the stuff, and getting less and less say over what happens in their state. And so we weren't able to back out from that and say, hey, we're not doing that. So why would we think that on something like this, medical, if you do take the whole thing, is an eighth of our economy. I think is what it used to be.
What's the definition of insanity?
Yeah, do the same thing again.
Do the same thing and expect a different result.
Out of 38 states, we know that it has devastated financially several of those states, and no one has been able to get out. So why would Wyoming, we'll be different in that? Not likely.
But I think that goes back to what we talked about initially, and that is as a it's a mindset or a frame of thought that is being developed over time here by human beings, and it is human nature that we, you like it. and anything free. If somebody was going to show up on your doorstep with $1,000 every week, would you be concerned about how you were going to spend that $1,000? Because you know Monday morning at 8 o'clock, there's going to be a guy on your doorstep with $1,000. And, you know, and that's the thing. There's that security in thinking that the government will take care of me, that it'll be all there. And when you get that and people start to live by that and they start to grow accustomed to that, and you say, and you as a legislator come to them and say, oh, by the way, we're going to have to cut that $1,000 off and you're going to have to go and do something different because we don't have it anymore. The government that we were getting it from, that we were funneling it to you, has now said that they're not going to give it to us and we don't have it to give to you, nor did we have it to begin with, so we're just going to have to shut it off. You can't. I will unelect you and I will find somebody that will fight for my right to have my $1,000 check each month. And human beings just... it feeds that tendency, that willingness to submit to that and to make that a natural part of your life. And it's where we're at as a country, and we've got to turn that around. We can't keep going down this path. And like Ken just said, you know, it's insanity. We can't expect a different result when we keep making sure that you're always cared for. You've got everything you need, and if you ever have a problem, you don't ever have to be self-reliant. You will be able to count on the government, and I will. Then the government will take it from someplace and provide you with it.
I think there's a deeper things, deeper seated in the backside of that is that, you know, the first question that in my mind would be, where did the guy get the $1,000?
But no, people
from?
Who asked that,
and people don't ask that, and it's touching on a second part there of what you said, a question of. The problems or stuff that I can do those things, and well, we don't even think about what the question is how many problems are we creating? What is the downstream problem that we're now creating with an entitlement mentality?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're getting third, fourth, fifth generation entitlement mentality, and so pretty soon you've done away with the very base and the very core of human. Responsibility.
I'll give you another quick story, if I may. There was one, my dad was sitting in a dealership over in Rapid City, South Dakota, and he was talking to the owner of the business, and they were sitting there, and the guy came in while they were visiting. He was looking at a four-wheeler or something. I don't remember what it was. It's been years ago, but the guy came in, and he was talking to the owner, Don, and he said, I'm looking for a job. And the guy says, well, yeah, I've got a job. He said, I've got a guy. I said, I'm looking for people right now to go in the back, clean up used machines that we've just taken in and start putting together new machines and getting them ready for the display floor. And he said, it's kind of a low-end job. He said, but it gets you started, and we'll find out if you're consistent and you're reliable, and we'll get you. And he said, you can work up from there. And the guy asked him, he said, well, what's it pay? And at that time, it was paying $5.50 an hour. It's been a long while ago, but it was $5.50 an hour. The guy thought for a minute, and Dad says, I'll never forget. He says, no, thanks. Turned and walked out. And, Don asked him, he says, well, is that what's, why wouldn't that work for you? He said, well, he said, I'm on unemployment. And he said, I would have to pay you 15 cents an hour to have that job. I would have to pay you. I said, and I'm not going to pay you 15 cents an hour to have a job.
Wow.
You know, and I mean, and that's when we've lost that realization or that desire to produce rather than to take. Then we see that just cascading down, and it's not a good place to be as a country.
Think about that person in your first story. Goes to the door every Monday morning at 8 o'clock to get that $1,000 check,
mm-hmm.
and it's now 8:15, and nobody's shown up yet. How indignant.
They're going to get
how
upset.
How upset. You have put me in a bind. I've already written checks. I know they're going to come down there. So everybody's written checks to is now in a bind as well.
Yep.
And it snowballs, and you never get out of it.
Well, one analogy you used on the floor, Representative Nyman, was about farm subsidies. And I thought it was particularly effective, and I was wondering if you could relay that analogy to our listeners, because I think it was great.
I'm trying to think what the situation was around that. I just know that—
I have the sound clip.
Play it for us. I think it's great.
I don't know how many people you'd offend here, but if you want to talk about programs, talk about farm subsidies. Talk about the amount of money that is put out, and people then they pretty quick, they don't know, they no longer farm the ground. We farm the government. because it's so much easier just to do that than it is to go out there and put the work into it. But what if those go away and you've built your entire system on the need to know that the government's going to be there to back it up and provide that safety net, which I've talked about before, and it's not there? Well, then the state has to pick that.
Man, if I could find a guy like that that believed that, I'd vote for him. I'd vote for him somewhere
he could. I'd vote for him.
Yeah, I'd vote for him. I guess it's, you know, and that's something that we, and you know, and you're going to get pushback on that. People are going to be upset about the fact you talk about that. But in reality, those programs were set up in the Dust Bowl days. They set up those programs in an effort to try to keep farmers alive long enough through those Dust Bowls so that when it started raining again, that they would be there and ready to go back to farming. And then those programs were to go away. You know, it's like the FFA creed. It's like when I learned in FFA, phenomenal creed. One of those paragraphs in the FFA creed says, in less need for charity and more of it when needed. That's the whole point of what we're talking about here. We're not in less need for charity. Those farm programs, those subsidies, there's people that live on that. They spend a lot of times, more time sitting in the FSA office than they do in a seat of a tractor. Because if I plant a crop and I plant it a little late, I'm going to get paid for the crop that didn't make. I can give you a myriad of examples of times when the government has created programs that trained you to do an ineffective and poor quality job of farming, because the government is going to pay you not to farm. The government is going to pay you for your losses. The government's going to do all these different things. And then we build a generation upon a generation of people that rely on, and they get their existence from, those government programs. And it's a wonderful example of that. It really is. And we don't. And that's what my parents taught me, is that you don't take those dollars because you don't know if they're going to be there later. And so you build your program up and you get to relying on them, and suddenly they say, hey, we can't do that anymore. And then you're where you don't even have ground ready to work. You're so used to getting a check for ground that's been left out. CRP, payment in kind. I can give you a list as long as your arm of different programs that people have been on for years. And that's just go down and get a check from the government. There's ground out there that is still getting wheat deficiency payments that hasn't seen a plow in 40 or 50 years. And they're getting a check from the federal government, taxpayer dollars, to continue to pay for their wheat base.
I would go even back historically, and I realize this is
bad,
you know,
place to be. Bad.
and you look at the Great Depression. If you look at the first couple of years in that, unemployment never went over 9. And at times it goes down to 6. At the time that the New Deal came along, it never saw anything under double digits again until World War II. Now think about that. Once government got involved, I mean, we had single digit. And granted, 9% wasn't good. I get it. But once government got involved, we never saw below double digits. And at times we saw 25%. So once the New Deal had come into play, it got very, very bad very quick, and it stayed that way.
I just thought I heard the bear growl. Did you hear the bear growl?
Could have been.
He's trying to cover up a fart.
That happens in the woods, too. So, I think Chip just illustrated how quickly these programs go away when the need goes away.
Yeah.
It never does.
It never does.
As you were speaking, Chip, I was thinking, Representative Nyman, excuse me, I need to begin to pay better attention to proper etiquette. I was thinking one of the rights that should have been enumerated in the Constitution that was not was the people's right to fail. You take away that right to fail and you chip away at the opposite end of that spectrum, which is the right to succeed.
No pun intended.
Precisely.
One more question from our listeners, and we'll just, whoever wants to grab this one, but it fits pretty nicely with what we've been talking about. So one of our listeners wants to know, are you familiar with what Medicaid pays providers compared to what private insurance does, and how long the waiting lists are for the current vulnerable population, and how they're going to be affected by putting non-disabled adults on Medicaid?
I can tell you I don't know the particulars, but from the testimony that we received, it's near half as far as the payment to the medical providers. And as far as the lines, I think that probably depends on a lot of different factors, where you're at, what the population that of the need is. And I think the point that's being made is simply this, that if you include a larger population, the lines are going to get longer. There's really no impetus for more doctors to get involved with this particular program, not when they're going to get paid half of what they would otherwise. And those are very general numbers. I don't have the specifics.
Well, is there anything else you guys would like to talk about? We know we've covered a lot on Medicaid expansion, but are there some other topics that are coming up that you'd like to visit on?
Yeah. So I'm sitting on revenue, and management council currently has in their purview by their own written rules that they can veto subject matters that have been looked at a number of times. And so I find it very interesting, and for your listeners to know, once again, as soon as we got out of session, Management Council kicked Medicaid expansion to the top of the list for Revenue Committee. So even though I've been there 7 years and I've probably voted against Medicaid expansion probably 10, 15 times in that length of time, once again, we're going to kick that to the top because we have liberals and we have rhino thinking that thinks that maybe this is the time that too many people are asleep and maybe they'll get it past the people asleep. So if you're out there listening, let your legislators know how you feel about it. It's they might get it done. Revenue Committee, I will not be surprised if it doesn't come out of on the House side, 4-5. It's a very close vote, and on the Senate, they might get it. And so when it hits the floor, if it does, it will be a committee bill. That's different than we've seen in all of my time there. When it comes out as a committee bill, its chances of success are much higher. It will be heard, period. It will be heard if it makes it out of committee as a committee bill. So to your listeners, if you care about this, if you do not want to see socialized medicine in this great country and in this great state, it's a good time to step up and let your voice be heard, and let it be heard strong.
I'd like to end on a pretty encouraging note. We're obviously devoted to fighting against government expansion, the three of us, and have made a lot of efforts along those lines, and we'll continue to do so. But we get a lot of complaints from our constituents about what's happening in Washington, D.C., what's happening in Cheyenne. And I just want to encourage people to get involved at the local level because that actually helps us.
That's huge.
When the local level, when our county commissions and our city councils and our sewer boards and our cemetery boards become conservative, it's a whole lot easier to push a conservative agenda at the state level. And I think you become a light on a hill to the communities around us. And that includes the states around us. And it makes it a lot easier even for our U.S. reps to promote a conservative agenda in Washington, D.C. But if we keep focusing on Washington, D.C. and just being frustrated about that and don't focus on our own backyard, we're not going to get there. And there's a lot of opportunities for patriots out there to get involved. And I just want to encourage every one of them to do two things. One is learn your constitution, both your federal constitution and your state constitution. And if you're simple-minded like me, get it on where somebody reads it to you. But if not, read that, get a copy of it and read it. But at the same time, start looking into the boards in your own county and start getting involved. Doesn't mean that you have to be on the board right away. Just go listen to their board meetings. Pay attention to what they're doing. There's a lot of dollars just within our own counties that are being spent, and maybe not in such a conservative way. And if we want conservative values at the state level, we should also want them right here in our own backyards. And I want to encourage people to do that. There's a lot of patriots out there, and I think before we get ready to lock and load with the weapons that we have, I think we really should be involved politically and be patriots that way.
And I think something to piggyback on that with both of my colleagues here is it's vital that we have an informed electorate. We need people that are willing to dig the information out themselves and to demand information from their representatives. I mean, we're there not to provide or push our own agenda as representatives. I'm in my personal belief and opinion, our job is to represent the people of our districts, not to go and mandate or dictate to them. I think that's a critical part of being an effective legislator, is to have an informed electorate. So when you go down there and you're on the House floor or the Senate floor, or if you're in committee meetings or whatever, that you can take the majority of the voices of the people that are reading and understanding the issues and have the information, and they know what they want to see happen down there. That gives you an ability to be able to be effective on down there. I know that is. I've seen that for myself. And I think that's a critical part of this. And I think we need to be better about making sure that people know what's going on, listening to them, making sure and encouraging them at every opportunity, just like what John said, even down to the cemetery board, knowing what's going on. Where are the dollars going? Finding out and asking for audits, holding people accountable for their actions. Accountability is huge, and making sure that we are doing our job, and that, that we can't do our job well unless our constituents, the electorate, do their job well. And that is listening to stuff like this podcast and being made aware of what's going on and asking questions, not just even of their legislators, but digging into the issues and finding out what's really going on, and then being able to even pass that information on to their representatives. And if your representative is not responding to you, he's not listening or she's not listening, then you might want to rethink about where you put your check next time when the box is next to their name. And so,
any comments, Representative Jennings? Everybody else has had a chance to wrap theirs up.
Well, I think that I agree with both these colleagues, and I enjoy serving with these guys. There are going to be some of the rock stars coming up. And I think that what they're saying there is very, for far too long, we've just checked a box and trusted that those people were going to go do what we thought that they were doing. And you need to go out and see how they're voting. I mean, you need to follow that up. And when it gets to the local stuff, go to those meetings. And if you're not satisfied with there, then maybe you know somebody that would hold some patriotic views and some conservative views. And because there's a lot of socialist thinking out there, even at the local level. And if we're to preserve this for our offspring, we're going to have to, you no longer can just vote. You must get engaged to some level.
Representative Bear, the chair recognizes Representative Bear a second time.
Well, just based off what Mark just said, I'm sorry, Representative Jennings, in regards to finding out the votes, there is the opportunity to go to the state website and look at the votes, but it's cumbersome. People have tallied the votes and put it in chart form that makes it a little easier to tell, you know, where's my representative, where's the House as a whole. Are they conservative? Are they liberal? Did they vote with the Democrats? Did they vote with the Republicans? And that site is Evidence-Based Wyoming. It's not a simple site to use, but if you're interested in knowing, you can figure it out in a few minutes and have a good picture of where your representative votes, whether they're voting along the lines of the Democrat values or Republican values. And I think it's good information.
It is good information, but it's dangerous. I mean, I got to looking at it, and the next thing you know, I'm buying campaign signs and filling out flyers.
Well, I think the big point that Representative Bear was making is, and well, everybody, Representative Jennings and Representative Diamond, is that we elect people, and we just kind of assume that they're going to go to Cheyenne and they're going to look out for our best interests, and that's not the case. And when you go to sites like Doug Girard's evidence-based Wyoming, I mean, you find out that the people that you've elected are probably not the most conservative folks, at least...
Despite what they say at a campaign event.
Absolutely. And, you know, my representative, I mean, he votes with the Democrats over 75% of the time, and yet he's from one of the, allegedly, one of the most conservative counties in the state. And so it's really important for our listeners to go check out that website and do your homework on the people that are running for office and really find out where they're voting. And what you're gonna uncover is that they're voting for a lot of really liberal stuff, very socialist stuff, like Medicaid expansion. Well, I'd like to thank Representative Nyman, Representative Jennings, and Representative Bear for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's been a delight. Mark, you've been here before. I know you'll be back. The rest of you guys are welcome anytime you can make time. You can call in or you can show up. It's more fun to sit across the table and glare at each other, that sort of thing. But we have truly enjoyed ourselves here. Thank you all for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, this is a wonderful opportunity. And I have to say thank you both, Dave and Ken, for what you're doing for the state of Wyoming, because this makes a difference. This gets the dialogue started, this gets the conversation going, and this gives people information that they need, and this is desperately needed in the times that we're in, because a conservative voice is, I think if you get out there and really talk to the people, they want this. But the squeaky wheel gets greased. And I mean, the louder you squeak and squeal, then the more you're going to get time. And I'm thankful that you guys are taking the time and putting the money into this and the effort to do this, because this is going to head our state in the right direction.
Appreciate your efforts. And if you're hearing this, share. Cowboy State Politics, cowboystatepolitics.com, is that correct?
That's correct.
We are the Ramble Room, and if you're listening to this, you know where to find us. But beyond that, we are working on another venture, which will be called Cross Creek Media. That'll be at crosscreekmedia.com. Some cooperative things. And David, I really appreciate you. Thank you for being here.